Hey, what's up, everyone? This is the Dot Daddy Podcast, and today is August 2nd, 2024, and I am here with Jesse Lima from 6E Micro. What's up, Jesse? What's
going on, brother? Appreciate you having me on here.
I know we tried to do this before, but you ended up going on a traveling, I think, with your wife, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But your trip looked awesome, by the way, from what I've seen. I have a question right from the beginning. What does 6E mean? What does that mean?
So 6E meant, so look, you see the graffiti in the background. I grew up inspired by the whole hip hop movement. My brother used to break dance like in the very beginning when breakdancing first started. So anything he did, I always wanted to do. So back in like 98, 97, 96, around there, kind of hip hop started coming back to Miami, the whole breakdancing scene. So I used to break dance, I used to do graffiti, stuff like that. So I was moving from Miami to Tampa, right? And my partner Magic, bro, we've been friends since high school. He told me, he was like, Jess, bro, how are you going to separate yourself, Jesse Lima, the barber, from any other Jesse's, the barber in Tampa? So he was like, bro, you got to come up with a name for yourself. You got to come up with a brand for yourself to stand out from everybody else. So this was before people were like branding themselves, man. He was like, you know, you got to think like Michael Jordan. So, you know, just thinking, man, I kind of named myself the sixth element. And basically what it is hip hop has five elements. You got breakdancing, DJing, MC, graffiti, and the knowledge of hip hop. And I always said that if it wasn't for barbers, hip hop wouldn't have the image that it has, right? So from the sharp hairlines, the fades, the Gumby cuts, the high top fades, the designs, like that's the urban style barber that does that, right? You got your classic barber that do the comb overs, the pompadours, like all of that stuff, but yeah. We're the urban style barber. So basically the last element, the missing element was the sixth element of hip hop, which is the barber element. So that's where that came from.
Okay, that makes sense. In my head, I'm thinking 6E. Does he mean sexy? Like, that's what I'm thinking in my head. Is that sexy? Is sex like?
it's funny, man. Like, coming up with ideas for, like, marketing and stuff, we've actually thought about that. Like you know, like a slogan, like, come get sexy at 6E. Like, just, you know.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for breaking it down like that. That makes sense. And your was that, you said your brother or your best friend?
Yeah, my brother used to break dance, and then my partner Magic was the one that came up with the whole.
Yeah, the rebranding, that is important. That's a big deal. That was smart to get ahead of the curve. Oh, yeah. So I also want to bring up, so a couple years ago, I was opening a box of pencils, graffiti pencils, and you might know where I'm going with this. And I'm looking in there. There's always this paper. I don't always look at it. I pull out the paper, and there's a picture of you on that. Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, you were on these box of white pencils. And I'm like, what the fuck is he? So what, explain to us what happened there. What is that?
Man, so, all right. So if we go before SMP, right? I've always been very heavy into the barber industry. I was 26 years in the game. Back in 2009, I attended my first hair show, right? It was in Atlanta, Bronner Brothers. And I was really trying to, I had just found out about hair shows, and I was very heavy into the designs because of the whole graffiti stuff. That's actually how I got into cutting hair, was drawing on people's heads. So I was at a show and I seen how they were, you know, applying a little bit of color, hairspray, glitter, things like that. So, you know, it kind of changed my mindset as far as like my designs, like how can I bring them to life? How can I stand out from people that are already up here doing these platform work and stuff? So my second hair show, this was in February. My second hair show was in August that same year. And I came up with a design, and it was basically, it was a koi fish on one side and like a Japanese letter on the other side, right? And I added colors to it. So, you know, there was no color pencils. There was no none of that stuff for the hair at this time. So, you know, I know women use eyeliners and lip liners to color their eyes, and they had different colors. So I actually grabbed some eyeliners, different color eyeliners, and I colored it. You know, I cut out the koi fish, so it was actual hair. Then I added colors to it with those eyeliners and glitter and all that type of stuff. But there was a lady at the show. And by the way, that design that I did, nobody's ever seen anything like that. It was a showstopper at the show. It was like paparazzi all over the place.
Everyone's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, nobody ever did anything like that. For my barbers watching, like, this was way before the Rob the Original was in the scene. So, yeah, there was a lady that she creates eyeliners. and she seen me out there using regular eyeliners. So she was like, man, okay, so there's a market for color pencils for hair and for the scalp. So when she seen me doing that stuff, that kind of made her come up with something that was for barbers to use for the designs. So just, you know, moving forward, she seen how I was like, you know, killing the game when it came to like the color designs and stuff like that. And she reached out to me. So I was her first sponsored barber. She was my sponsor. And wow. we actually created Magic. Magic's been a graphic designer. His ever since we graduated high school. So he actually is the one that created her new logo. He rebranded her logo and all of that stuff. And there's a design that's on the box. It's a flamingo.
Yeah.
I did the flamingo, and that was kind of like the whole sponsorship thing there. So yeah.
Wow.
That was her.
So you were one of the first, if not the first person kind of doing that stuff on the back of the heads, like making them cool designs. And then they noticed it.
Actually cutting the design out and then applying the color to it. Yes, I was the first to do that. Before that, like they would shave people's head bald and then just draw it on there.
So okay.
Like barbers used to like hate on it and talk all kind of shit. Like, oh, leave your crayons at home. So right. I took it the next step, actually cut out designs, faces, like all kind of different logos. Like I've done stuff with like White Castle, Google. I've done all kind of stuff with different companies.
Wow.
But yeah, I cut out the design, apply the color, and, you know, just bring it to life.
How did you figure out how, like, cutting the hair? I mean, I would imagine their hair would have to be longer than like a 4 for you to, you know, if you're using a 4 guard on there, like to actually get the texture. Like, how did you even figure that out?
Well, a 4 would be too long, man, because the hair
would.
Right? So okay. It would end up patching it. So you actually got to cut it down to like a 1 or a 1.5. And it's basically like drawing in reverse. So you're cutting out the negative and leaving the lines, the outlines in to create the shapes and the faces and the shades and all of that stuff.
But who did you first practice on? Was it one of your kids? Were your kids born at that time or one of your friends?
I was 14 years old when I started cutting hair.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So backstory, man. I used to watch a close friend of my best friend, bro, at the time. I was 14. He was 19 years old. He was the barber in the apartment complex I grew up in. And I seen him holding the edgers like a pencil. And he was just making two little lines on the person's head. But I seen the way he was holding it. He was using the corners. I was like, huh, so I could probably use the edger like a pencil and draw on somebody's head. I've been an artist my whole life since a little kid. So okay. I knew art was my thing. So I convinced one of my buddies to let me draw. Like I cut his hair down to a 1. My parents were barbers. All right, so I used their clippers. I cut his hair down to a 1. I grabbed the blue Bic pen and I drew. I don't know if you remember Cisco, Drew Hill.
Yeah, of course.
Their logo that dragon. Yeah. So their logo is that Japanese dragon. So I drew that on the back of the dude's head and I cut it out. And then I shaved everything off and just left the design there. And that was really what sparked me into getting into barbering from the beginning.
Wow.
On the art.
Wow. Yeah. Damn, so you've been doing this for a long time. How old are you, Jessica? You don't look that old. You're saying you've been doing this
for a long time. I just turned 40.
Oh, congratulations, man. Congratulations. I also wanted to bring up, so a couple years ago, you were a victim, and I mean that in the most sincere way, of your account got hacked. And at that point, I think like it seemed like 20, 30 artists' IG accounts got hacked. Can you tell us kind of what the hell happened there?
Man, you know, it's crazy. So I was talking to a fellow barber of mine here in the area that was going to start working at my barbershop. And we were literally on the phone. And he's been trying to get into the barber industry as well. And, you know, we were just talking, having a conversation. And he's like, man, you know, he's trying to get on with this one company there, this product company, blah, blah, blah. And, yeah, we were just having this conversation as I was on my way to the S&P office. And I get off the phone with him, and then I get a DM from him. Awesome. Hey, Jess, I just got an opportunity to become an influencer for this one hair product company. I just need your vote, bro. So I was like, bro, say no more. I got you. I'm driving. I just grab my phone, boop, 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 hit the vote from, threw my phone to the side. I get here to the office and I go into my Instagram and I'm logged out and I can't log in. So I go onto my business account, the 60 micro account, and then I look for myself. and my name was changed to Jesse Lima underscore underscore. No, sorry, Jesse underscore underscore Lima underscore underscore underscore. I was like, no way, my page just got hacked. Oh, no. So I call my boy up. I like, hey, and he's like, immediately, he's like, bro, please don't tell me your page got hacked. I'm like, how do you know? He's like, bro, I just went onto my page and it's hacked. And I had somebody else just call me and tell me that their page got hacked through my page. I was like, bro, yeah, my page just got hacked. Right? So we were like, fuck. So he's super embarrassed right now because he knows that, you know, my page is everything. It's my business, all of that stuff. So he ends up not coming to work in my shop, man, like because of how embarrassed he was already. It's not his fault. Right? So I didn't pay attention to the link. And basically what it was, when I went back to it and I looked at the link, because they had texted me the link from, you know, from DM that he shoots me a text message. I look at the link and I open it and it's the link. You know, when you try to log into your Instagram account from somewhere else, yeah. They tell you, hey, somebody just tried logging into your account. Uh-huh. You know, you got to prove it or unapprove it. So I approved it. So I gave them access to log into my account.
But it tricked you, right? It's like it didn't look like that.
Yeah, it did. It looked nothing like that, man. And normally you'll get an email saying, hey, somebody just logged into your account from wherever. And honestly, you have about 3 to 5 minutes to respond to that and say yes or no. So if I would have caught that email, since I was driving, I didn't pay attention. If I would have caught that email, I would have been good. But since I didn't notice it, man, yeah, my page got hacked.
And you so just thought it was like your friend asking you for, you know, real quick. Can you,
Yeah.
It's reasonable, you know, very reasonable. Yeah. Dude, you and I think a couple other people who like kind of talked about it, you know, I think saved me because I eventually, you know, it went around to a lot of people. I was like, I got to be careful. So then I was like, I'm not clicking on shit. You know, I got paranoid for a while. But how did it eventually get resolved? Did they ever give it back to you? Did you ever actually talk to the scammers? What happened?
All right. So Instagram and Meta, no help whatsoever. Right. At all, man. You know, before I get to how I got it, it sucked because a lot of people's got pages got hacked on my page because they figured how to act like me.
Yeah.
Right. Before that, like they started with the crypto thing and immediately they switched into like pretending they were me. And I built my brand on trust. I represent everything's about me is with trust, man. Like I'm an open book. There's like, I help everybody that ask, like, you know what I'm saying? Like it is what it is. I feel like I was put in this earth to help people. All right. So my trust is there. So anybody that I was hitting up about this stuff, they would just go through with it thinking that it was right. So that sucked, man. So I was reaching out to Meta every single day, bro. I lost sleep. I've never been stressed out. I've never been depressed. But when that happened, that really messed me up, bro. Like I was fucked up. So bad, man. Like crying sometimes, like it was, yeah. it was bad because people were actually getting taken advantage. There were some people that paid deposits for S&P, some people paid deposits for the classes, right? Yeah. And Meta wouldn't help at all. So I would do the whole recognition thing, like where you take the picture, you do the 360 video thing. Like I even cut my hair down short. Like I went through my page and smiled, and serious. Like I did all the faces, and my face is all over my page, and it would not get approved, man. But to how I got it, basically, so the hacker used to rub it in my face. He would stay communicating with me through my business account. So he would throw in my face, hey, I just got this guy's page. Hi, you know what I'm saying? Whatever.
What a fucking dick.
Bro, a dickhead. So like we would get into back and forth arguing like for an hour. We'll get into conversations. And one day he literally told me, he's like, look, bro, this is what I do for a living. This is how I take care of my family. He was in Nigeria. Right. He's from Nigeria. Uh-huh. Like, we don't really have anything out here. Like, I know this sucks, but this is how I take care of my family. And to an extent, I was like, damn, that sucks. I get it, but it's still fucked up. Right. Like, and it's crazy, scary how everything can just be taken away from you just like that. Yeah. Right. Because really what it was, man, before my page got hacked, my office was producing anywhere from 70 to like 120,000 a month.
Wow. You know?
Wow. And my classes were pumping like crazy. So it's literally like somebody just took the building where my office is and I just pulled up and there was no building. It's like, where do I go? Where's my work? Like that's what it felt like, man. And for about 6 months, that's how it was. And I just, you know, try to every single day, man, I about 4 in the morning to like 12 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning. I was doing the thing to try to get my page back, studying. I paid a couple white hackers to try to help. You know, like I spent a lot of money. I lost
did
a lot.
Did those hackers, were they able to do anything?
Nothing. Damn. I even met a guy that worked for Meta, right, out in LA. And he was like, hey, bro, I'm pretty sure I can get your page. He wanted to get his S&P done too. So I was like, well, bro, look. And he was a Norwood 7. So I was like, look, man, I charge $4,500 for this. If you can get my page back, I'll give you all your money back. So he's like, cool, no problem. Let's do it. Right? So I did his S&P, and he was working, and he couldn't even get it. And he worked inside of Meta.
Wow. So, and for people who don't know, when he says he hired a white hacker, he doesn't mean a white person. He means like an ethical hacker. So yeah, I just want to clarify that. All
right. Yeah, there's black hackers, right? It's like the black market. It's the bad hackers. And then a white hacker is the good hacker. It's the ones that work for the government, for Apple, like, you know, for companies.
They catch a lot of child predators too.
Exactly. Yeah. They're the good guys.
Yep.
So, you know, long story short, man, we'll fast forward about 6 months. I'm back and forth with the guy again. And he's like, hey, bro, my brother is in the hospital. He's dying. I need $1,000. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to play his game. So I'm like, bro, if your brother's hurting, listen, give me access to my account and I'll send you the money. I'll send you whatever you need. It doesn't matter. He's like, no, I can't do that. I got over on you, blah, blah, blah. Like, you're going to get over on me. I'm like, I'm being genuine, bro, because this is how I am for real. Like, if he really needed, if his brother was really hurting, whatever, man, what's $1,000, right?
Yeah.
Like, give me my account back. I'll send you your money. We're good. So he sent me my login information. I would log in and he would log me out because he would hit the notification thing. Like, no, it wasn't me. So it would log me out. So he kept on doing that. I'm like, bro, look, I think you're bullshitting me. You know what I mean? If your brother's really hurting, I guess his death is on you. Fuck you and fuck your brother.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then I just kind of left him alone for about 2 hours. So I went back on there, logged in, and he didn't change anything. So I was able to get in, and immediately I went, changed email, changed phone number, changed everything, and switched everything back over. And immediately, Instagram shut me down. Well, so 3 days later, Instagram sends me an email. Hey, basically, you know, we've seen that you logged in to this account. We want to verify that it's you. So they sent me the thing, the 3D picture crap thing that they do, and then it got approved. So wow. I got my page back. Yeah.
Did you actually send them the money?
Hell no. Nah, man. Because like I said, he kept on shutting me off. So I'm pretty sure it was fake. He was just trying to get the money.
So did you figure out why he actually gave you the real login credentials?
Well, the thing is, he set up the two-step authentication. So I could give you right now my login information from my Instagram, and you'll log in from over there from where you at. And then I'm going to get an email that says, hey, somebody just logged in from here. Was it you? And if I say no, it's going to kick you off.
Yep. So by leaving him alone for 2 hours, he probably got occupied, probably scamming somebody else, and you called him at like the right time?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Wow. Yeah, I was able to get, I got lucky, bro. I definitely got lucky. But at the same time, I'm gonna give you viewers some advice. If that ever happens to you guys, end that page, create a new page. It's way better. Because when I got my page back, I basically got a dead page. Everybody was reporting the page. You know, I was reporting the page like crazy. So the way, you know, how Instagram works, like they dropped me to the bottom from spam and all that. So they dropped me to the bottom of the algorithm. So I spent over $70,000 learning about social media, learning about how to get my page, active, how to engage with people, how the reels and the carousels and pretty much how everything works in order to get my page active now. And it took me about a year to get it decently active. My page still isn't like it used to be because I started Instagram the moment it started.
And 2012?
Yeah. And I was at like 25 to 30,000 followers right when I started getting into S&P. So my page was very active, man. I had a lot of people. I had a lot of engagement. And I did all that through the whole hair show stuff. But yeah, if I knew now what I know then, I would have just started a brand new page because once you start a branding page, you're basically a new partner to Instagram. So they're going to help push your page. So it's actually better just to start all over again than to try to get your page back and try to rebuild it and all of that stuff.
Dude, that's, I love that you persisted and you were talking to them and, you know, you tried negotiating and all these different things, but you're right. It, everyone's reporting it because you want them to report it, right? And that does suck. But to me, it's like, damn, because it shows your history of like kind of you evolving as a person, as an artist. You have pictures of your family, even though you might have them still on your phone. But it just kind of shows the history and timeline of, hey, these are the, this is my life at this point in time, and here I am now. And yeah, that sucks. But at least you were able to kind of build back and you're growing and growing, and you did the investment to learn how to get better on Instagram. So has it overall, I mean, are you still able to make sales? I mean, was there any significant loss after that?
Yeah, no, there was definitely a major loss. I'm definitely nowhere near what I used to be at. I still get my consultations here and there, but it's not like I used to, man. I was doing about 5 to 10 consultations a day with my So now it slowed down a lot. So I'm still working the whole social media. And the thing is, so one of the main things, I hired a coach, and the main thing that he taught me, the first thing that he taught me is like, well, you have to find out what type of following you have, what clientele do you have, right? And in doing all the research for all of that stuff, it came down to where the majority of the people that were actually following and engaging with me are all S&P artists and barbers. So there wasn't no like regular, you know, regular potential clients anymore. So, you know, an S&P artist is going to come to me if they want their S&P done. But for the most part, they already have it done, or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, or it's not a big marketing platform for me anymore, where as far as like having potential clients available. So once I found that out, now we knew how to direct my page to try to get, you know, regular people in. And it also taught me how to create some revenue off of that, too, knowing that there's a lot of people that take, you know, these crash course S&P classes, and you know, get taken for their money, they take these classes and they don't even know how to mix in, they don't know why they're using what they're using. So I've been able to create a master class to be able to help those individuals, right, and continue education with them. So it showed me a way that I can make some revenue off of my page while I was trying to build my page back up to get, you know, random clients again.
You're so right about a lot of fellow artists, and obviously you can make some sales to them, but what we want bald people. We want people suffering from hair loss. And the other thing is, a lot of times they won't, at least in my experience, they're not going to follow me. They might, but only for a little bit. More so, they'll just search it because they don't want people to know, hey, I'm suffering from hair loss and I'm looking for options. Because like, hey, other people might see, hey, you're following this guy because you're balding, which means you might want to get that. And not everybody's open to letting, not everybody wants others to know that they're suffering from hair loss, you know?
Definitely. Yep.
And you being a person with a full head of hair, congrats, you know, on the great genes. Do you find it more difficult to make sales because that, has it stopped you? Because I mean, as far as I know, you don't have any SMP.
No, I don't. You know, I get that question all the time. And it hasn't affected me in any way, just because of the trust factor that I built with my social media, the presence that we built with our branding. We've always looked official, even from the very beginning. When I first got into SMP, I hit the ground running, right? I had a big following with the whole barbering community all over the United States and even countries outside of the United States. So I already had 26 people, my clients, that were lined up ready to go the moment I finished my class.
Wow.
So out of those 20, me understanding marketing and understanding social media, and it's all about perception and stuff like that, I knew that out of those 26 clients, every single client, I need to create at least 10 forms of content off of each one. So 26 times 10, I got, you know, so much content for the next couple months that I could look like I just started doing SMP and I'm running full speed for the next 6 months. With content every single day. So I was definitely lucky and blessed to be able to get into the industry and just full speed with it. So going back to the question, I never had the issue because people already just trusted me.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
I do get people to ask me, like, you know, does anybody in your office have SMP? So, you know, I tell them, yeah, my partner Magic has it. His is a density job because he's just thinning hair. So he has a density job. But if they do want to see somebody like a full Norwood 7, somebody that's bald, my barbershop is literally 1 minute away from here. So a bunch of my barbers have SMP done. So I got one that's like the fan favorite, which is the manager at my shop. So I'll have him kind of come through, or I'll even take the client over there to the barbershop so they can kind of see the professionalism there too. So it just kind of helps with them being like, oh, you know what? This guy is serious. Yeah. Like, he's not just some guy in the backyard doing, you know, suckering me. And even like when they come into my office, they're like, oh, wow, I didn't expect it to be like this. It's like a real doctor's office. It's big, 1,500 square feet. I thought it was going to be like a little hole in the wall.
Yeah. So, and I know, and I'll go to the next thing, but I know of someone who had a botch job, who was an SMP artist, who we won't know. We'll probably cut this out here. But I know someone who got their head fucked up, and then they flew down to for you to fix it. And he told me about it, and he said you did a great job. He sent me pictures. Looks great job. And I think you know who I'm talking about. And he's a good dude. He's a really good dude. And it sucks that he had to deal with that.
My favorite people, man. I'm so glad he reached out to me. Like, forget about the S&P procedure. Just him as a person, a character, like his passion to the industry, man. I love that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So where did you grow up, Jesse? You said you moved from Miami. Are you from Miami, Fort Lauderdale?
I'm from Miami, from Homestead. Fort Lauderdale is Broward County. Miami is Dade County.
Okay.
So people get it confused. But yeah, I'm from Homestead, Florida, way at the bottom, man. So if you think of Hurricane Andrew, that's where Hurricane Andrew came through.
Okay. And that's where you went to high school and everything?
Yeah. I grew up there. I left Miami when I was 20 years old.
Okay, 20 years old. And you said your parents were barbers?
Yeah, my mom, my dad, my uncle, and my grandfather. They're all barbers.
Wow. Yeah. So you grew up in the shop, I'm assuming, going around?
Well, they worked from home. My grandfather had a barbershop in Cuba in his house. We're on Cuban descent.
You're Cuban?
Yeah. Okay. And then my parents, my father was also a truck driver, so he cut hair on the weekends, and he'd go to like people's houses. He never wanted to work in a barbershop and be confined to a place. Like, to him, cutting hair was just for fun, a place to hang out with his friends, play dominoes, drink, hang out, cut hair. You know what I'm saying? It was more like that type of thing. And then my mom used to actually, like, that's what she did for a living, was cut hair. She was a stylist and she was a nail technician. So we had it kind of set up at the house like that. People would just come to the house and she'll do that.
Okay. You mentioned dominoes. That's a big thing in the Latino community, isn't it? Dominoes. I've heard that multiple times. Do you play? Are you a domino player?
I haven't played in a long time, so my skills are probably a little, you know, choppy. But yeah, I grew up playing dominoes.
The people I mean, they love it. I mean, especially some of these retired guys. I mean, he's like, I'm playing dominoes all day.
It's fun. It's once you understand and how, like, it's a counting thing. So you know how to count the pieces and the numbers and all that stuff, and you can manipulate, especially if you're playing like in partners. It's fun.
Okay. So what, were you a good kid, bad kid?
I was a good kid hanging out with the bad crowd.
Okay.
So I'll give you a little story on that. My mother's Jehovah's Witness. My father's from the streets, right?
Okay.
My mom became a Jehovah's Witness when I was about like 4 years old. And my dad was literally in the streets. Like, he sold drugs. He did his stuff. But they were always together. So my mom used to always, like, she used to press me. You know, the Jehovah's Witness thing, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a religion just like anything else. They're just very by the book, right? So she was very strict with me. And one thing that used to kind of, you know, push me away is I couldn't have friends that weren't in the religion. So she used to always tell me, you know, remember, show me who your friends are and I'll tell you who you are. So by her telling me that, I was like, you know what? I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to hang out with all the people I'm not supposed to, the ones that sell drugs, the ones that rob people, the ones that do all this crazy stuff. I'm going to hang out with them, and I'm not going to do anything. So I hung out with a bunch of drug dealers. I hung out with a bunch of the gangs. I was cool with all the gangs. They wanted me to be a part of the gangs and stuff. And I've always been such a leader that I'd be like, bro, like, if I'm not part of your gang, you still ain't got my back? right? And they'd always be like, nah, Jess, you know what? We respect you. Because I've always been a leader, man. I've always been, you know, strong on what I'm doing. I've always been about helping people and just being that cool guy with everybody. So nobody could ever fix their mouth to say anything negative about me. Ever, even from as a kid. I got in a lot of fights because I hung out with the wrong crowd. So if they had beef with somebody, I ended up inheriting their beef too. So I'd have to get in my fights and stuff with them too. But that's what built me up, bro, because my first time ever smoking weed, I was 19 years old. And wow. The only reason I did it was to show my nephew that it's nothing that serious, right? He was getting a little bit older. So I wanted to kill his curiosity. Cause that's what my dad did with me. That's what kept me from using drugs. When I was like 11 years old, he took me fishing and he was like, look, son, this is weed, this is coke, this is heroin, this is pills. People use this for this. So he killed that curiosity so I wouldn't have to be like, oh, let me see what this does or anything like that. And because he was in the streets, he was a user as well. And I hated it, right? He was an alcoholic. So I used to see what would happen, you know, the fights and stuff between him and my mom and stuff like that. So that kept me from doing those things, right? So I learned from watching other people's mistakes. So hanging out with that bad crowd kept me from robbing, stealing, you know, doing any of these bad things. So again, man, yeah, I was always a good kid, but I hung out with the wrong people and I was definitely mixed in with the wrong crowd.
You definitely come off as an independent thinker and to be an independent thinker and a leader, you can't really cave to peer pressure. So I know what you mean. Being around it, sometimes someone showing something to you is enough for you to be like, I don't want to fucking do that. Like my mom, I hate cigarettes. And when I was 7 years old, my stepdad put this cigarette out in the soda and I drank it. And I was like, bleh! You know, this is fucking disgusting. And I always hate the smell. So I'm 36 years old and I've never taken a puff of a cigarette ever. They gross me out. I don't want to.
Yeah, that's the only thing I tasted, bro. I took that hit and I started throwing up immediately. I was like, yeah, no, hell no. I don't know why the hell they... And my dad used to tell me, he's like, I hate these fucking cigarettes. I'm like, but he be smoking cigarettes. I'm like, why you smoking? He's like, I hate it. He always had cologne, so he never smelled like it. So I'm like, what's the point? You know, but yeah.
Which one of you... Was it your grandfather from Cuba? Which one person was from Cuba?
So both my parents are from Cuba.
They came over?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. My dad, you know... Everybody seen Scarface. So, you know, in the beginning, when you got that ship that comes in from Cuba in 1980, it was the Mariel. Uh-huh. My parents actually came from Cuba on that ship right there.
Wow.
My dad was part of the military out there in Cuba. And when he found out that they were doing that whole thing with the United States and Cuba, he actually stole one of the Jeeps, went, gathered a bunch of the family, busted through the fence, and snuck everybody onto the boat. So that
was holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
My brother was like 9 years old at the time. I still wasn't born. I was born here in California.
Okay. In Florida?
No, I was born in California, in Los Angeles.
Okay, and then you guys came to Florida.
Yeah, they came to Florida, right, during that ship, and then they left to L.A., to California. I was born out there, and then they ended up coming back to Florida, and I was raised in Miami from like 2 years old.
Is there any... stories you can share, you want to share, that your dad told you about being in Cuba? I mean, that had to have been fucking wild.
Yeah, I mean, really, my dad was always wild. He was always, he's a womanizer, man. He always had like girls and stuff like that. So his thing was really just his poison, his biggest drug is women. So, I mean.
But in regards to like the communism.
The communism, not really, man. Like he never really spoke on that, bro. Like he was part of, you know, the military thing, but he was always he always told me I was always arrested because he'd take off, right?
Okay.
He'd go park and stuff like that, never check back in, and then they'll come and get him at the house. So he was like always in and out of like their military prison because he never really we never really talked about that stuff.
Is he still alive now? Your parents are still alive?
Yeah.
Okay. And so then, okay, so you're growing up, you graduate, high school, what, 2000, 2001, something like that?
2002.
And what's your first job? Do you get into the barber industry? Is that when you got into it?
Man, the only application I've ever filled out was for Winn-Dixie. It's a little grocery store. And I worked there for 4 weeks. When I started working in Winn-Dixie, I had just started learning how to cut hair too. So within that month of working at Winn-Dixie, I think I only made like $36 or something like that. Was like, because I was 14 years old, so I could only work Saturday and Sunday. So I was getting like $5-$10 checks, right?
Yeah.
But I was cutting hair. The first 2 weeks I cut hair for free, and then the 2 weeks after that I was charging $3, and I made $200 off of $3 haircuts. That
fuck those yeah. Two.
So I was like, yeah, man, fuck this. And then I was always arguing, man, I've always been hairy. So when I was 14, I had a full gold tee already. So I was always getting arguments with the managers. Like, you got to shave, Jesse. I'm like, I ain't shaving shit. man, like you said, I've always been very, like, you can't tell me what to do.
Yeah, yeah. So you were one of those kids in high school, freshman with the mustache and the facial hair?
I'll be walking down the hallway in security. I ain't had no book bag. I was back in school. I was a bad kid, right? I was a horrible student. But yeah, I would walk around no book bag. Security always chasing me down. Let me see your ID, because I always looked older. As a matter of fact, my best friend that was 19 and I was 14, we used to like we talk to girls and stuff sometimes, and he'd say that he was 19, and I'd tell him that I was 18, and I used to pass all the time with it.
Oh, that's great. That's great. When you're 14 years old to get that, you're like, fuck yeah.
Hell yeah. It was winning.
So you quit Winn-Dixie after 4 weeks, and you start, do you eventually go, I mean, are you all self-taught? Did you eventually go to like a barber academy training thing?
Nah. I learned at home how to cut hair. Like I said, my best friend was the barber too. So when he seen that, you know, I showed him that I could cut. We actually started cutting hair in my apartment, which was on the first floor. So we had like one barber chair and a regular like dining room chair. And every like three haircuts, we'll swap, right? So we had like a little whole barbershop thing going on in my house. I worked in a barbershop. I started working in a barbershop environment when I was 16 years old. And it's crazy because they were coming after me, the barbershop owners.
They wanted you? Like recruiting you?
Yeah, they were recruiting me, man, because I was kidding. I was taking clients from everywhere. I was very cocky, very arrogant. The breakdancer, bro, like I'm all competition. So like I used to actually walk by the barbershops with a fresh designer haircut that I just did on one of my clients, and people were like, yo, who did that? I'm like, me, I did that. And like, I don't need to get a haircut here. Follow me to the crib. Yeah. Right. So I'll literally just go out there and grab clients. So but yeah, the word of mouth for me in my area was big. As a barber, as a kid, as a barber too. So I started working when I was 16 years old. I didn't get my barber license until I was moving up to Tampa. And the thing is, at that time, bro, Miami, man, like, there's loopholes to everything, right? Okay. So I opened up my first barbershop straight out of high school. I graduated high school. It was like June. And in August, beginning of September, I opened up my first shop. So a year prior to that, I was teaching six of my close friends, I taught them how to cut hair so that they could start building a clientele. So when I opened up the shop, we were all in there. And the way I got the occupational license, I actually used one of my friends that was older than me that had a barber license. I used his license to get an occupational license to open up the actual business. So it was in there, no licenses, no nothing. And the crazy thing is that I used to work right across the street from the city hall. So the guy that would send out inspectors was actually my client. So no questions asked, no nothing. We were just rocking out, just killing it.
You know? I mean, as long as you're putting out good work and you're not fucking giving people dirty, you know, using dirty clippers, you should be fine.
Exactly. But yeah, when I decided to move to Tampa, that's when I said, all right, I got to go to school before moving up here. I don't know how Tampa is. It looks more suburb. It could be more strict. And sure enough, when I got here, my first 3 months of living here, I still didn't have my license yet. I had just finished school, so I had to take my test, and I immediately just started working in a barbershop, and the inspector came in that week, hit me with a fine. So I had to, you know, take my test, get my license, and then start working in a barbershop out here.
Is it like, so in Delaware, you have to do a certain number of hours basically for free. Is it like that you're at?
Yeah, it's in Florida, it's 1,200 hours.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the same, which is insane to me. It's like, come on. So when did you stop that and start your own barbershop in Tampa?
When I moved here, I sold my half of the shop to my partner. It was me and my boy that opened up that barbershop down in Miami. Mm-hmm. I sold him my half, and honestly, I didn't want to own a barbershop. So for the first 10 years of living here, I was just doing the hair show thing, doing the industry thing. I was just building me, I wanted to build myself as the brand.
But working somewhere else?
Yeah, yeah, I was working at some other guy's barbershop, but I was traveling, I was doing the shows, I was, you know, I was building myself up big time. So I always looked at like Nike, right? So that's like where like the six comes from. So our logo evolved. It went from like the full name to breaking down to just the logo itself. So now you see the six, it's like the Nike check. And then, you know, at the time, you know, no Diddy, but P. Diddy had his name, right? It was Puff Daddy, and then you got Sean John. Yeah. So he had his brand, and then he became a brand. So that's kind of what I started doing too. Is like, let me build up the Six Element name, doing these hair shows. And even though I was with other companies, I always had the 6E on the logo on whatever company I was working with. And I built up the brand itself so that when I did finally decide to open up a shop here, you know, I could separate it.
But yep. But still have access to both worlds.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
Definitely.
So when did you eventually, so you do all that, you start your own shop, I guess, after what, 10 years? And yeah. Then do you get into SMP? How did that go?
I got into SMP in 2016. I opened up my barbershop in 2012.
So you did 4 years just being a barbershop owner.
Yeah. And I was still heavy with the hair shows, man. I was traveling every month, 2-3 times a month. I was in and out, back and forth, doing shows all over the United States at the same time. But there was a lady, the way I got introduced to her was a lady came into my barbershop to talk to us and introduce us about SMP. And if we referred anybody, she'll pay us, you know, $500 per referral. Mm-hmm. So I sent somebody immediately, no research, no nothing. I was like, damn, the pictures look good, right? Kind of find out the company that she was with used to give them marketing material. So that wasn't even her work or anything. Right. So, yeah, I sent my buddy to go get it done. He was a doctor and they butchered him, bro. He had big ass blue dots all over his head. So after that, I was like, yeah, no, ain't no way in hell. This is definitely not it. Fuck S&P. Right. Yeah. I ended up paying for his laser tattoo removal. I did the research on how
to fix it. That's nice. Yeah, that's nice.
Well, I sent him there. I felt like it was my responsibility. Yeah. I didn't do the research for him. And he just trusted. Again, bro, people trust me, right? So he just trusted my word, and he went and got it done. So I paid for the laser tattoo removal, which was about 8 sessions, about $400 a session. So damn. I paid some money to fix his scalp. So a year later, right, this is 2016 now, I'm at a hair show that we put together down in Miami, and I'm talking to this one guy, which is actually my partner Magic's friend, and I'm looking at him, and I'm like, as we're talking, I'm like, damn, this dude looks bald, he's shiny, but it looks like he's got a fade. So, you know, I made conversation. I'm like, bro, you got S&P done? And he's like, how the hell you know? I was like, man, I'm profiling you. You got a shiny ass head and there's no little stubble. But these little dots look just like hair. It looks so good. So at that point, that's when I was like, man, you know what? I could do this. It's pointillism. I mean, it can't be nothing else. I'm an artist. I know how to draw with little dots. I can draw your face with just dots. Yeah. So I was like, man, I have to learn how to do this. So then I just started researching, you know, right around that time is when Eric Roberto from Jarrell Hair Inc. Right.
Out to Eric.
With the shows and stuff like that, too. He actually came out to one of my shows here in Tampa before, like right when he was first getting into the S&P thing. So he was the first barber I saw doing S&P. So I was like, man, I got to learn from them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I knew they were teaching classes, but our schedules could never align. Never, never, never aligned with each other. So I ended up just finding somebody, the first person I could find here in Tampa, and I just went and took the crash course and, you know, just started doing S&P right off rip. So I'm somewhat self-taught. Like, I went and took a course. I just needed to understand what I'm using, why I'm using it, and how to use it. And he definitely taught me not to go deep in the skin. But, you know, I took the class. It was crazy. Like, he would come, teach me what to do, and then leave to go do a consultation. Come back. Oh, man, you're killing it. Leave to go do the procedure. Oh, man, how you moving just like me? That's great. But give me a couple of tips. Leave to go do another procedure. So it was like, it was a straight crash, 2-day crash course, man.
Sounds like my training.
Crazy, dude. crazy how people get away with that shit. But, you know, again, man, my first model that I worked on, his name is Angel Ross. right? He actually took the class with me. We both took the class together. He's in the industry too. He does SMP now too. He's out of Jacksonville. He's actually one of my main successors, students. So we took the class together. And at the time, he was a big name in the barber industry too, working with Andis and stuff. So he was my model. So the pressure was there, you know, like I can't mess him up. Everybody's going to see this, right? So it came out really good. I was very light with my touch, so the dots were very tiny. They definitely faded. I used to take 5-6 sessions to get people done. But, you know, I got it done. His S&P looked really good. Then I get back from the class, and my boy Chico Boom, which is another big, big name in the barber industry, hits me like, Chico, yeah. So he calls me like, yo, Jess, bro, congratulations, man. I love it. You know, I'll be there. I'm going to come up there Sunday, bro, so I can do my S&P. I was like, Chico, chill. Let me get things set up. He's like, nah, bro, I'll see you on Sunday. Click. So, again, my second one, another big-time name. If I mess him up, everybody's going to know. I did him in my recliner inside my house.
Oh, shit.
And it came out really, really good. So, yeah, man, like, just with those two right there, big-time names and stuff, people just trusted me. And then went back to my barbershop. I had 6 of my barbers. And then, like I said, about 20 of my clients are ready to go. So in the next 2 weeks, I knocked out 26 people. And
holy shit, dude.
That's incredible.
That is incredible. That's a lot of people when you first learn. And to be able to get that type of experience right while you're learning, I mean, you learn pretty quick, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I never messed anybody up. I never blew anybody out. Well, let me go back. The way I messed up was never a blowout. The way I messed up was oversaturation.
Yeah.
Right? I definitely overfilled. Thinking like a barber, right? And what I mean by that is when we cut somebody's hair, we're 100% done with the client.
Yeah.
As soon as I take the cape off. I'll see you next week or 2 weeks for another haircut. SMP, we're technically done about 70 to 80% on the first session. Second session, 80, 90%. Third session, 100% done. We should be done, right? Yeah. Sometimes second session we could be 100% done. So I was overfilling in, getting my dots pretty close together. So, you know, I had more like that shadowish look. My sharp hairlines were super sharp, right? Yeah. So that's the way I messed up back then. But my touch was always extremely light. So I was taking 5 to 6 sessions to get people done because I was very cautious not to go too deep in the skin.
And in the beginning, I was only using the one round liners in like 2000, because I started in 2018, really doing it, messing around 2017. But they only had the one round liner or the 0.30, you know, the 10. And I mean, I was like, I ain't fucking using that 10 unless it's like a dark skinned person. I was too afraid. So it'd take me forever. I was doing like multiple, you know, like 4 or 5sessions.
Yeah, same thing. I was using the one liner, using dynamic ink, you know, just over the skin. And then and the guy that taught me, you know, he only let us use the tiniest needles.
Smart on his end. I mean,
he didn't want to mess him up, right? Because I'll mess up his name as far as like, you know, somebody that he taught. So at least, you know, that I appreciate. But yeah, he definitely. I only had the small needles. So whenever I worked on dark skinned people, bro, oh man, that was hell. I used to have to pack the shit out of it with those tiny ass little dots to make it look like there's something going on.
And it almost like doesn't show. I know I had to learn the hard way too. I did like it. I'm like, man, it's not really showing up. Yeah. So then eventually that's when I did, and I was using Easy Tat. Do you remember Easy Tat needles? So I was using those and eventually used the 0.30 and then I felt a little better. I still though, now I still use a variety of needles. I know some people are like, I use the 0.25 on everybody. I just don't, that's not how I do it.
Yeah. The only thing I just don't use the 0.30 at all.
Ever? Not even on a density fill?
Nah, I don't like it, man. And it doesn't matter the brand. I feel like they split easily. I feel like they leak. They're not consistent. Like, so I'd rather just slow down my touch with the 0.08, with the 0.25.
Just leave it in a little longer.
Sit a little more so it packs a little more ink in, because that's going to make the dot a little bit bigger already. So I manipulate the size that I want with my touch.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Let me ask you this. I mean, so we kind of talked offline about this. How do you approach the straight line edge up? Somebody comes in, they want a straight line edge up. I've discussed on many podcasts. I don't like doing them. I do them. I don't like doing them, but I do them because I feel like, because I work from the front. I used to work from the back, but I've been working from the front for the past 4 or 5 years. And so when I'm stretching, I start from the middle and I go this way. Everyone's like, well, you need to go the opposite way or start from the left. How do you kind of do it?
So when I first started, right, I've always worked from the back of the head.
You still do today?
Yeah, I still do today. I'll touch up at the end. I'll sit the client up and then because it's always going to be a little off. So I always sit them up and then I'll just freehand and touch up. I need to touch up head on. But I work from the back. And the reason I do that, what I learned using those graph edge pencils with the designs, they were so messy. So you have to be very careful where you place your hand, your fingers, your palm, where you're placing it, or you're going to smear colors together. So I was already very cautious with that. So just common sense told me that if I'm working from behind the person, I'm going to work my way right to the line and I'll never smear. And definitely, like if I'm right-handed, so I would work from the right side to the left side because I'm always behind the white line.
Okay. And I
work, white. So that way I never smear the white line. And then stretching, yeah, I hold the wipe, I always hold it with these two fingers. And then these three fingers are my stretching fingers. So I always have like a bridge when I'm on top of the skin. So I'm like this. So that white line will be sitting somewhere in between my fingers so that I never smear.
Yeah. Makes sense. Makes sense. So you basically, you're getting as close as you can to that white line from the, and then you readjust at when you see them from the front.
Yeah, because I use, you know how when you draw the white line on, you have the top crit edge and then you have the bottom edge of the white line. I actually use the top side of it as my guide. I don't go into the white line and I don't use the front part of the bottom part of the white line. So I come right to the white line and that's the
top line. Do you use any special pencils or anything that don't smear as good as much? The graffiti one. Is it called, it's called graffiti?
Graph etch,
yeah.
Recently, about 4 or 5 months ago, I stopped using them because of that. I still have them, and I'll explain why. So what I use now, I have this little pen that I found on Amazon, and it's actually to draw hairline, eyebrows.
Okay.
Right? And it's basically a permanent makeup pen. So it will smear if you rub on it, but if you touch it and like slightly smear, it's not really going to smear that easily. Right. Okay. If you use it with the wipe, it comes right off. The green soap comes right off. If I go like this to it, good enough, it'll come right off. So that does help out. And then I still use the graph edge pencil. Once, like I moisturize my client's head before I work on them to make sure that the skin is nice, moisturized, and I don't like working on the skin dry. So that pen won't draw on there. So I'll draw the hairline on before I moisturize. If I'm gonna map out like the balding areas, then I use the graph edge pencils because I can still draw right on the oily skin with that.
Okay. Makes sense. And the pen you're talking about, is that the one with the razor where you got to razor it down?
No. It's like an actual ballpoint pen.
Oh, okay.
So, like think of like a gel pen, like a gel tip pen.
Okay.
But it's for permanent makeup.
Yeah. I got to try something because I am so tired of, show me the pal. It's worth a shot. It's worth a shot, you know? So, how's the market down in Tampa?
The market is good, man. It's been blowing up. It's been growing. There's, you know, when we talk about market, you know, like I'm talking about like as far as money goes, because this is a high ticket item. And then also, you know, there's bald people everywhere. But Tampa's a place, it's just like Miami without the vanity as much, right? Miami, everybody's super vain. Everybody wants to look a certain way, like all of that stuff, but they're very cheap down there, right? And that's coming from the barber side of me, like when I was down there. Up here, like they're into their look, but they're not afraid of spending money. They're not afraid of, you know, taking care of themselves. And I learned that when I first moved here, just with the haircuts, man, I was getting tipped by little kids in Miami. I wasn't getting no tips whatsoever, you know? So here people don't mind the pay. So the market's really, really good. It's just like anywhere else, man, everybody does not know about it. If I walk out there and ask 10 people today, I'll say about maybe 4 to 5 know about it here, but then the others still don't know. So we're still growing it.
I know. Yeah. We really need a freaking A-list celebrity to get SMP. I want to ask you about, I saw you have a pretty big, you had a pretty big achievement, big transition. You lost 124 pounds, which is fucking incredible. What happened? Were you a smaller kid and then you gained a bunch of weight, or have you always been a bigger guy? And then you were like, fuck this, I need to lose weight. Like, kind of walk us through what happened. What made you want to take action and take your health serious?
So as a kid growing up, I was always the thicker one. I wanted to be a bodybuilder when I was a little kid. Everything my brother did, I wanted to do. My brother was a bodybuilder. So I was very into that, but I was always like the chubbier, heavier kid growing up. When I started breakdancing, when I was like in eighth grade, when I started breakdancing, I lost weight like crazy and I got really fit at that point. I played sports and all of that stuff, but I never really took I never took it to the point where I would be fit with the sports.
Okay.
But breakdancing really got me in shape. When I graduated high school, when I started, so my wife, we've been together since high school. So I'm going to say,
congratulations, by the way. I mean, what, you've been together 24 years, I think I saw.
Yeah, 24 years. Yep.
Fucking awesome.
So I started dating her in high school. So about my 11th grade year, that's when, I'm comfortable. I'm feeling myself. Every time we go out to eat, we're going to restaurants. I got the money. I'm making money cutting hair, and I would eat her leftovers. So little by little, I started gaining the weight, right? I graduated high school. I was about like 200 pounds, but I looked stocky because I used to lift and stuff. So people would be like, "Oh, Jesse, gain weight." I'm like, "Nah, bro, look, I'm still good." But right out of high school, because I opened up my business right out of high school, there was no more working out. There was no more breakdancing. I had no time for that. It was go, 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 grind, grind, grind. So I gained weight because I would starve myself all day. If I had a cancellation, I'd run McDonald's, come right back, cut hair, or just not eat at all, and then eat when I got home and smash some Spanish food. So slowly I just ended up gaining the weight because I wasn't active no more, other than just behind the chair doing this.
And eating everything at night right before bed is not good.
Nah, bro, especially like, right? Because you're hungry, you haven't ate all day. So
eat everything.
Yeah, it tastes extra good when you're starving.
Yeah.
So yeah, I ended up gaining the weight, man, like crazy. I had my son when I was 20, my first son when I was 21 years old. So even more busy, right, with the whole kids and all that stuff. We moved to Tampa, then it was like starting all over again, had to rebuild a clientele, all that stuff. So I was just so busy that I wasn't taking care of myself. I was more focused on grind than caring about myself. So I've achieved pretty much every goal that I ever wanted, right? I remember when I moved to Tampa, I wrote down, I want people to know who I am. I want to own a barbershop by this time. I wrote down a list of goals that I wanted to achieve. And a couple years after writing that, I found that paper in my drawer and I was like, holy shit. I did this, I did this, I did this, I did this. So I'll say that I succeeded in what I wanted to. Then with the whole hair show before SMP, I was at a point where I was feeling burnt out. I was like, man, I'm making all this money, but I still need more money. My lifestyle just, it got more expensive. More money you make, more money you spend. So I was unhappy because I wasn't making what I wanted to be able to be at home now with my family. So I found SMP, got into it. That changed everything for me. It gave me time because I was making what I was making in a week, right? So I was able to make a lot more money. And it got to the point to where in 2020, 2020 when the whole COVID thing happened and we shut down and all that stuff. I'm sitting in my house. Like, I got this badass 4,500 square foot house with a pool. I got a dog. I got three amazing kids. I got this wife of mine that she's everything. I have my barbershop. I'm successful with SMP. My parents are good. I'm just like, I have everything. Why am I still depressed? Why am I still not happy? Like, I'm so unhappy. And I've always been into the way I look, but I had to grind. I had to make something happen for myself. Even like when I did the shows and I would get on stage on a microphone and talk and motivational speaking, I was doing all that. I hated the way I looked, but it is what it is. I had to do what I had to do to build my brand, to build my business. So I never let my insecurities affect me in any way, shape, or form. But they were always there. We'd watch tapes of like, I'm on stage doing something and everybody's like, bro, you fucking killing it. And I'm like, bro, how the hell you let me wear the tight ass jeans with that long ass shirt tight as hell around my stomach? They're like, bro, don't nobody care about the way you look, right? They just care that you're out there killing it. But that was my problem.
Yeah.
So I was very unhappy. So during the whole COVID thing, you know, I was just chilling, bro. I was loving it. For one, being at home with my family, not having to work, not or anything. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I think we should have like at least a month shut down from working every year. Right? But as soon as everything opened back up in August 19th. So August 19th this year is going to be 4 years that I had gastric bypass done.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For years prior to that, man, I was always trying. I knew about fitness. I knew about nutrition. I knew about all of that stuff. But what it really takes to lose weight and maintain it and change your body's dynamic on how it functions and the muscle memory and all of that, how everything works, it was way too much for how busy I was. Because I'll go hard for 3 months, drop 50, 60, 70 pounds, and then the next 3 months, I'll gain it right back. Because now I don't got time to go to the gym. I don't got time to meal prep. I don't got time to be on a diet. I did every diet you could think of. They all work. But then once you start eating regular, poof, you're right back to fat again.
Yep.
And even more fat because you're losing so much muscle with all these crazy diets. So a close friend of mine, a really, really close friend of mine, somebody I look up to big time today, he ended up having gastric bypass done. And he was like, yo, Jess, bro, look, I just had this done, dog. Like, I wish I would have been done this. This is working. And I'm like, bro, I was going to ask you if you did anything because I see you losing weight. And then at the same time, my other close friend that's a doctor was like, Jess, look, if you get the gastric bypass done, you're going to drop 100 pounds, 60 pounds, and you're not going to gain that shit back. It's going to be so hard for you to gain it back because your stomach is going to be small. So you won't bounce back that as quick as right now. Like, I'll do a diet, drop 50 pounds, get that shit right back. Because you really have to stay committed for the next 2 to 3 years for your body to adapt.
Consistency.
You have to. Like, there's no other way around it. That's why you see so many people lose weight, gain it. Lose weight, gain it, right? And then even with the gastric bypass, you can still gain the weight back, but it takes so much longer.
Yeah.
And I went through a surgery. I honestly felt like my wife was always in, you know, yo, just get the surgery done. You know what I'm saying? Just get the surgery. And I would always be like, nah, hell no. And it was me feeling like if I do it, I'm giving up. Everything I think I put myself to do, I succeed at. And I couldn't succeed at losing weight. So I felt like if I went that way, I was cheating and I was being a little bitch. Right? So again, when I see my friend do it and it worked for him, and then I was talking to my other friend, the doctor, it just made so much more sense. I was like, man, my lifestyle is just not going to allow me to do this. So fuck it. I got the gastric bypass done. I dropped about 70 pounds with that. And then after that, I've just been working out. And since my stomach is now the size of a healthy human being, right? I get full quicker. I eat what I need to eat, and then that's it. So the lifestyle is completely, it's already there for me, man. So if anybody's watching and listening to this and you're thinking about it, bro, just do it. DM me.
Do it.
And I will talk you right into it. I'll give you my doctor that I went to and all that stuff, man, but do it.
Does insurance cover it, Jesse, or do you have to pay out of pocket for that?
My insurance did cover. I got insurance through my wife's job. She's a financial advisor with Edward Jones. So we got pretty good insurance. So they covered 70% of it. But I did have to. I had to get a sleep study test, and I had to do the whole sleep apnea thing, you know, with the sleep with the
mask.
Yeah, with the mask for 6 months. Every single day I had to stick to it because it would notify them if I did it. So in order for them to approve me to pay for the surgery.
And they needed to justify to the insurance company, this guy fucking needs to get gastric bypass.
He can't breathe right now. And to show dedication that I really am going to commit to something.
Yeah, because I know of people who they get the gastric bypass surgery and they're like, look, if you keep eating, this could rupture, you know, because I'm pretty sure, don't they staple or they cut out part of your stomach to make it smaller, but you can break through that.
Yeah. If you're stuffing it, you could bust up the seams or the staple.
Yeah, and that's called septus. You could die. Oh, yeah. So congrats on that for being consistent and taking the initiative and pushing yourself. When you started doing what, once you lost all that initial weight, I'm sure you know who David Goggins is, right? And and his story, and he talks about losing, you know, 100 pounds and all that sort of thing. Did you have, like, when you're losing it, what did you get, a lot of loose skin, or was it coming off like natural? Like, how did that go?
So I definitely stuck to high protein. And I was lifting weights because I did. My biggest thing was I didn't want to lift all. You know, some people get the gastric bypass and they're all like sucked dry, right? They're all like,
yeah, yeah.
right? And they look crazy. So I wanted to make sure that I still kept my muscle. Obviously, muscle memory. I used to lift weights and all that. And even throughout the years being fat, I still would go to the gym. I would just not stick to it, right? So I always had the muscle under. But I do have some loose skin in my like lower stomach area that I'm gonna have to get removed. I have a little bit in my chest, but the more I build up my chest, it kind of fills in. The bigger I get my chest, but in my stomach, I got a little bit of loose skin. I'll probably end up getting the surgery maybe next year or something. Just to.
I have a little. I feel like I have a little like around my belly button. It's hard for me to get. I don't know if I'll ever be able to get it tight. Because I had lost, but I only lost like 30 pounds, but I don't know if I lost it too fast to where it can't, you know, unless I starve myself to death, I don't see it, you know, kind of getting to the tightness that I need or that I want. Good for you, man. And so now what I wanted to talk about, Jesse, is you're married. You said you've been with your wife since high school. How many kids do you have?
We got three boys.
Three boys, what are their ages?
Got a 19-year-old that's about to be 20, a 14-year-old, and a 10-year-old that's about to be 11.
You teach any of them how to do SMP or barber?
My oldest and my middle one has, they've all messed around with the honeydew melon. My middle one has messed around with the clippers. You know, my oldest doesn't want to cut hair. He grew up around me in the barbershop. So that's kind of pushed him away from it. But I've always told them that I want them to try to figure out something on their own. Find out what they like, you know what I'm saying? And just try to do something. At the end of the day, I can always teach them how to cut hair. I own the barbershops. Like, I can always teach them how to do this. I can teach them how to do S&P. They can also get into the financial advisor world. My wife has her own office with Edward Jones. So, you know, they have backup options if needed. But my oldest is in college right now. He actually gets back today from Italy. He's been out there for 6 weeks studying abroad.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, they have options, man. They're blessed. We're blessed. You know what I'm saying? I was able to provide this type of lifestyle for them. Something different than my wife and I had.
Yeah. Hey, I'm happy for you. I'm really happy for you. I mean, having the pool, having a big house and a dog and your family is literally the best feeling in the world. And a lot of people won't understand that, but it really is the greatest feeling in the world. Just having a nice place to live, especially if you grew up poor like I did. Sounds like you did. You grew up in a similar way. It is amazing. It is amazing. It is so much different, but I have a big fear about overspoiling my kids. You know, I'm like, I don't want to be a little bitch. And I also don't want to be a spoiled brat. You know, so that's always in the back of my mind. I mean, what do you suggest to, like, in your experience as a dad, just getting them to have their own work ethic, you know?
You definitely have to find a balance, bro. We want to give our kids everything. We don't want them to mess up. We don't want them to have to bust their head open. Like we want them to just listen to me and you'll be successful, right? But yeah, man, like I know a lot of my character, a lot of my work ethic, all of that comes from the way I grew up. Right. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm a Section 8 baby.
Yeah.
Right? I grew up on Section 8. We grew up poor. Like we just my mom is very simple. She never wanted anything extra. Like she's good with it. She always used to knock down my dad's dreams of like doing stuff, being a business owner or like doing his own thing just in the fear of losing Section 8. Right. Because that was like a safe place. Right. So, you know, just make minimum, just make enough that you can live the life that you like. Like everybody doesn't have to be a millionaire. Like you don't have to make $1 million to live like a millionaire, right? You can make $100,000 a year and live like a millionaire if you know how to live within your means, right?
Yeah.
So it's really finding that balance, man, of teaching them how to still earn what they get. So my kids get everything they want, but they have to earn it, bro. School is priority. Their grades have to be on point, man. With my oldest, a B was an F. Right, so we were hard, and he's so smart. He's just like my wife, man. I'm a little dumb. You know what I'm saying? I'm street smart. I'm common sense smart. But books, it doesn't interest me. So like, unless it's something to benefit me, like getting my barber license or getting into S&P, right? I don't care for anything else. My middle son, same thing. This guy's a brain, but he's also just like me as far as like the common sense part goes. And my youngest, he's all over the place. I don't know. But we definitely taught them that they have to work for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, they have to put in the work. They have to put in the grind. As long as they stay committed to doing what they have to do, then we got them. You know what I'm saying? You could say we're spoon feeding them, but they're working for it. They're earning it. You know, they're creating their paths, right? My oldest son, I'm like, bro, you're turning 20. Yeah. Right? You're in college. College is your job. So one thing I instilled with them at a young age, in ninth grade, was with him first. I was like, bro, look, school is your job. Grades are your pay. So if I'm working at the barbershop and I'm not there, I'm falling asleep, I'm not showing up, my work ethic is trash, I'm making very little money where we can't live. So that's the same thing as you not doing your work at school and getting D's and F's and not being able to graduate. Right? Yeah. So I instilled that in his head. That's like, okay, it makes sense.
It's a good analogy.
Yeah, because that's what it is. So I honestly, with him, I was like, look, what we're going to do, I'm going to pay you for your grades. $20 an A, $15 a B, $10 a C, negative $2, negative $5 a D, negative $20 a F.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
In his report card, he would get paid. So I made it into like an actual job just to start teaching him how to work.
Gives him some motivation, right? An incentive to go hard.
Some people need that, right? Some people need it. Yeah. So he, you know, I taught him how to make his little bit of money. We taught him how to save. Like, my kids all own stocks and stuff like that. We've taught them to understand about that. Not just saving, but having emergency funds, right? When the whole COVID thing hit, bro, we were good. We had emergency funds for over 6 months for the S&P office and the barbershop. I had emergency funds for a good year. We could have been shut down for a year. We'd have been good. No problem. Sorry, I didn't have to stress that. So we instill that and teach that to them. We teach that to my barbers in the shop too. So, you know, at the end of the day, man, you definitely have to make them work for it, right? My son, my oldest, messed up a little bit his first year of college, lost his scholarship. He was slacking. So now you got to get a job. And now you got to pay your car insurance.
That's a motivator.
But it is to work, to make money, to pay bills, to not have money. And work a bullshit.
That is a lot of Americans live that life.
No, that's what it is, bro. And then work a bullshit job that you can't have what you want. Like, he's used to the lifestyle. We travel, bro. Like, that's our thing. We travel. We travel a lot. Like, last year, we were in Europe, in like 8 different places of Europe, right? Like, this year, we've already traveled about 6 different times between Europe and the Caribbean. Like, we travel. Like, that's our thing. And my kids are used to that. I've exposed them to the good and the bad. I've taken them to poverty places, and I've taken them to rich places. I've taken them to mediocre places so that they know that there's options in the world. I think that's the number one thing. You got to expose your kids so that they know that it's not just what they see at home.
Agreed.
So he's got a certain standard that he wants to live. So he knows that he's got to work to get there. And he's got a cheat code with us. He doesn't have to go through the bumps and stuff that we went through as long as he listens. They're still going to want to do their own thing. So it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially with the growing up with the social media. We didn't have the social media. You know, that's a whole nother factor for these kids. And I'm glad I didn't have it. And I talk about that. I really am glad I didn't have social media as a teenager. And I think you're doing a great job, by the way, as a dad and a business owner and a successful barbershop and SMP business. And you're a great artist. What products do you use for SMP?
Man, I use the Art of SMP, bro. The Blends ink and the Arrows needles. Chris,
shout out Blends.
Yeah, man. Shout out to Chris, the art SMP. He got into SMP about 6 months after I did, and we knew it. We knew each other a little bit through the barber industry, but we just linked, bro. The moment we got into SMP, and a lot of my success, a lot of my knowledge, what I learned as, you know, trying to figure this out on my own, was with Chris, man. He's the only person from day one that held me accountable, not even really knowing me.
Wow.
I went hard for like 6 months, and then I disappeared for 3 months, and he was on me like, yo, Jess, what the hell are you doing? Yeah. Why aren't you posting? What are you doing? Don't leave this money on the table. Bro, look, this is what I made this year. Like, he stayed on top of me. He's the reason I opened up my first office within a year of doing S&P, like got away from the barbershop. Like, you know, that's my brother in the game 100%. And when he decided he wanted to get into the needles and the ink and all that stuff, you know, I definitely helped him with making sure quality was good and all that stuff. You know, I was part of Follicue. I was part of FYT, their pro teams and stuff like that. And they're great companies, great products, right? Matt Ayulo, shout out to Matt Ayulo. He was definitely, when I first started YouTubing, he was the guy that made things clear to me, the way he would break things down through his YouTube videos. So I learned a lot off of him, just watching his videos, never even knowing him or anything like that. So, you know, great products and all that stuff. But, you know, when my brother in the game decides he wants to do his thing, and I know that he's all about quality over money, like he just cares about making sure that we take care of our clients, I knew that we would have a great product to work with. So yeah, that's what I use, man.
Yeah, blends is great. The needles are awesome. I love the needles. They're fine. Good. So, and I want to ask you this real quick. I mean, your barbershop, how many barbers do you have there?
So I own two barbershops.
You too?
My first location, we've been open 12 years. I got 14 barbers there. Second location, we got, we've been open 2 years. I got 12 barbers there.
Wow. How far apart are they?
About 2.5 miles away from each other.
Shut the fuck up.
On the same street.
Do you have different names for them?
Six Element and then Six Element 2.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. So basically they're, my first location's in the heart of Brandon, right? And then the second location's in the heart of Valrico, which is the neighboring city. And I did that because we got to the point to where almost we were all only appointment only. I only had like two barbers that could handle walk-ins. And we were a very high volume barbershop. One of the busiest barbershops in the Tampa Bay area. So I didn't want to lose that. So that's why, you know, one of my barbers was like, yo, Jess, I'm ready to open up a barbershop. Like, I won't do it unless I'm doing it with you. So we did a partnership, you know, we did a partnership split. So he runs that barbershop. That's his baby. That's his team. He's actually somebody I used to cut when he was a kid, right, in middle school. And he got into barbering right out of high school. And he started working with me in my shop. And I mentored him. And he's a spit image of me when it comes to, like, business, when it comes to taking care of his family, his kids, all of that stuff. Like, I seen a lot of me in him. So he was like, man, I would definitely do this with you and for you. So we opened up that second barbershop. Took a couple of the barbers out of here that were busy to make that shop look busier and get new barbers here. And yeah, we've been able to blow it up really, really fast, man. So now if we're too busy, we send barbers to over there instead of having to send them to the other barbershops. Cause like I'm all about unity. So if we were too busy, I didn't want to tell you, no, you can't get a haircut today. I'd be like, look, across the street, go see such and such. He's a good barber, right? Like I'd send barbers clients over, but we were feeding too many barbershops. So I was like, you know, let's just open a second location and we'll just keep the business.
That's smart. That's good shit. That's amazing, man. Congrats on that. I mean, you got three different businesses. You know, businesses, shops going on. It also sounds stressful, if I'm being completely honest.
Stressful. Super. That's why I vacation a lot.
Yeah, you got to. I mean, you got to.
I recharge about 10 times a year for sure.
I'm assuming you have some sort of manager at these locations that kind of does most of it.
Well, the Brandon location, I have my manager there. He runs everything real smooth. But I actually, 3 years ago, I retired from cutting hair completely. But I actually just got back into cutting hair in January. I started cutting again. So on Fridays, I go into the barbershop and I just, you know, I got like 10 clients that I cut, some of my old clients. And I really did it just to kind of add that presence back in the shop. People that come work with my brand, bro, like they want to be around me.
Yeah.
So it was kind of missing a little bit of that, not knocking my manager, like he does a great job and everything, but they still wanted that just.
Yeah, let you. Yeah. And you being there, everyone steps their game up. Right. And they say, hey, he's successful. I can be successful. And also you want to stay on top of your skills, right? You don't want to lose them.
Well, I mean, you know, so I got three boys.
Yeah. Yeah. So they cut their hair still, right?
Clients that come and get S&P done because not everybody has to shave the head bald, right? So, you know, if I can keep them with some hair, I'll figure out how to manipulate the haircut to work with S&P if it's possible. If not, then they got to shave it, right? So I still had my little, you know, I used to get my fix, but Yeah, man, I enjoy being at the barbershop, bro. I genuinely love cutting hair. I never got into it for money. It was for the passion of art. And being there and helping these guys and watching them grow, I opened up a barbershop just to create opportunity, give other people a place to be able to make money and live their lives and, you know, just teach them whatever I know.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. Do you have any trainings or anything coming up?
I got a class coming up in September, September 23rd through the 25th, S&P class.
Nice. Nice.
The whole summer, I actually took it off, man, from training completely.
Yeah. I haven't done any trainings either, but we're doing one in September as well. Training is like, to me, I like training, but I don't want to do it all the time because I feel like it kind of slows me down. I have other, because then I can't work on all the people that I need to work on too. You know what I mean? But I do enjoy it. I do enjoy it to a certain extent.
I love teaching, man. When I got into SMP, off rip, I was like, I'm going to learn SMP and I'm going to start teaching it. I've been teaching my whole life. The moment I worked in a barbershop at 16 years old, I was like the main barber in that shop, and I'm very proud of wherever I'm at. So I taught all the barbers how to cut better. And any shop I ever worked at, like if I ever worked at somebody's barbershop, the owner loved me. I would just take over their barbershop and make their shop successful. Because
that's
great. Around successful people. Like I just can't be the only guy. I'm not selfish like that. Right? I like to stand out, but I like to stand out amongst with a team.
That's a real leader. Building people up is a true sign of leadership and not trying to say I'm the best and everybody else sucks.
There's no such thing as the best, bro. Like
yeah.
Your natural hairlines might be better than mine, but my heart hair is better than yours. So who's better? You know what I'm saying? The client says, "Yo, you're the best," right?
Yeah.
So, and that's how I've always thought about it.
As long as you're putting out high quality products, that's really what matters. Right. You know, it's consistently putting out high quality work, people are happy, you're getting good reviews. That's really what, you know, you want to do.
That's all that matters, bro. Those smiles on people's faces with S&P, bro. Like I'm very strict with my students, man. I'm very strict with who I teach. I love teaching, but I know how serious S&P is, right? So I deal with clients, and I'm sure you dealt with them too, man, that try committing suicide.
I've heard so many crazy fucking stories, dude.
Bro, so I'm very, very, very serious when it comes to that, man. I'll cut a student off real quick if they're, you know, just not caring about it and doing whatever. But all right, bro, like you're on your own. I'm not mentoring you no more.
Yeah, no, you got to take it fucking serious. It's serious work. I mean, people are paying a lot of money, and most of the time they're doing their research. Sometimes they got to take out a loan. I mean, you know, this is a serious thing for them. They're taking off work to be there.
Yeah, and the biggest thing to me is the mental health, bro.
Yeah.
Right? I had one guy that he literally tried to commit suicide twice. He had alopecia at the age of 6 from all the bullying. He tried to commit suicide when he was 11. Then hair kind of came back, got into bodybuilding around 21 years old. He tried to commit suicide again because everything fell out again. He felt like his bodybuilding career was over. I did his SMP at 23 years old, and he's living his life right now, bro. Like when he was in my office, he was like, "Jess, this is my last resort. I don't know what I'm going to do if this doesn't work out." Well, all I heard was, "Jesse, you messed me up. I'm killing myself."
Oh, right? My God.
So I was just like, yo, it's me and you, bro.
Yeah.
All the appointments, like, it's me and you, bro. I'm going to change your life. And to today, bro, we're close friends, man. He just got married the other year.
That's amazing.
He's back into his bodybuilding. He got the dream job of being a police officer. Like, man, this is a guy that, man, I sat there, I cried with this dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love S&P, bro. I love what it does for people. I love it.
It's very rewarding. I used to work at JP Morgan, and when you would do a good job, you know what they do? They just give you more work. This time, now I get like hugs, you know what I mean? Or a tip, which is a lot better. I hated sitting in a cubicle. Wasn't really for me. So I really enjoy scalp micropigmentation as well. Before we wrap it up, what advice do you have to any up and coming artists?
You got to fight the fight. You know, doing SMP is very easy, bro. Right? I mean, if everybody knew how easy it was to do SMP, because just as easy as to do is as easy to mess up. But once you know how not to mess up, there's no messing up. Like, I tell my clients all the time, I don't have to knock on wood. I will not create a blowout. Unless you jump into my needle, sneeze, cough, something like that, I pass out doing your SMP, your SMP is going to be perfect. And it's in my contracts. If I mess you up, I give you all your money back. I pay for your laser tattoo removal, and I do it again for free. You know what I'm saying? It's 100%.
I love that.
So it's very easy to do, man. But getting clients is the hard part. That's the part that throws people off, right?
Learning to be an SMP artist is one aspect. The other part is business owner.
Yep, marketing, advertising yourself. Not getting taken advantage of by these marketing lead gurus, right? Like,
don't get me started.
Man, I've lost that, but hey, listen, it is what it is. Like, you know, learn from it, right? Like, I got taken advantage of. Okay, cool. So now I learned about it. And now I teach that class, right? Like, but yeah, the biggest thing, man, is fight the fight. You know, for some people it comes easy. Some people it doesn't. But you got to put in the work, man. It's so rewarding. If it's the money you're after, if you do a great job, you're going to live whatever lifestyle you've ever wanted. You could make over $1 million a year doing S&P with no problem whatsoever, right? It takes $2,700 a day to make $1 million a year. So how many $2,500 procedures can we do in a day, right? Four easily, right? So it's like, you know, the money's there, but if you're really looking into something that helps people, it makes people feel good because that's what makes you feel good, I feel like S&P is 100% the way.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. And how can people find you? What's your social medias?
Man, you can find me on Instagram at 6e.jessielima, at 6e micro as well.
All right.
Daddy.